Thank you everybody for coming along and welcome to Ignite 2016 back here on the Gold Coast. Thanks for coming to our session this afternoon on how available is SQL Server 2016. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Warwick Rudd. I'm a principal consultant with SQL Masters Consulting. I'm a data platform MVP, Microsoft Certified Master. Feel free to reach out to me if you've got any questions via my Twitter handle, via my email, or you can reach me via the company website. My partner in crime this afternoon.
Hi, I'm Henry Rooney. I'm a SQL Server architect and at William Hill, Australia. I'm also an MVP and an MHDBA, if anyone's interested.
Okay. So we can see here we've got the abstract for today's session. I'm not going to read through what the abstract is. Hopefully you guys have had the opportunity to have a read of the abstract, and that's why you're here today. But you will see there are some points which are highlighted. Well, they're kind of highlighted. But what we're hoping to take out of this for you this afternoon, options in SQL Server for high availability, SQL Server 2016, and how you can keep your job. What we're hoping you can take away, or the goals for you from today's session, one, that you've got the knowledge around what's available for you for high availability. Some of it also lends itself to disaster recoverability in your SQL Server environment. Understand what 2016 is bringing to the table for you in your environment. And once you, if you don't have it on your roadmap already, when you walk out of here and you go back to your places of work, that you look at putting SQL Server 2016 into your roadmap. And finally, you can walk out of here, go back to your office, and lead discussions around designing, implementing, and maintaining SQL Server 2016 high availability solutions. So with that, Henry's going to start and run us through what high availability is all about.
Thanks, Waz. So with the impending release of Windows 2016, I'll just use that, I'm fine. We are all familiar with the many concepts of high availability. This word cloud here shows us we have multi-site, we have failover, we have technologies, malicious attacks. These are all concepts that are very familiar to all of us here in this room. There's one thing that obviously always on has had a dependency on to deploy within enterprises, and that is a Windows failover cluster. So that dependency has meant that some clients have been limited in deploying Windows failover clusters. With the technologies released in 2016, we're tackling that dependency. But just to go through some of the previous technologies that were released for SQL Server, specifically in relation to HA and DR, we'll just go through some of the earlier releases of SQL. So in 2005, we introduced database mirroring. We also had failover clustering, replication and transaction log shipping as our HA and DR technologies. With the advent of 2012, we brought in always-on availability groups, which were enhanced then in SQL 2014. Always-on brought together the best parts of database mirroring and failover clustering, so it gave you another option then when deploying to this environment. So what we're going to do in the 2016 stage is we're building on an existing stack with availability groups, with clustering, and we're going to improve the availability another level yet again when deploying our SQL 2016 environments.
So with that, SQL Server 2016, it's what we're here to learn about. So with that in mind, what we've got, under SQL Server 2016, under the mission critical stack, there's three pillars that we look at. Security, performance, and availability. Now, we're not here to talk about performance or security. The things or the features that fall under those two pillars are being spoken about in other sessions that have happened earlier yesterday or today or tomorrow. If you're wanting to learn about those particular features, I recommend that you go to the other SQL Server 2016 sessions. We don't have the time to go through those. Instead, we're here just looking at the new or enhanced features in the availability stack. Okay. Now, feel free to take photos, but all of these slides will be available, or they're pretty sure they're up on the website now. So the whole slide deck is available for you, so you can sit back, listen, and enjoy the session. So with that, one of the key features with always-on availability groups, Windows Server Failover Clustering. With that, Henry's going to take us through what's happening with 2016.
Thanks, Warwick. So there's been many enhancements with Windows Server 2016. I'll go through a couple of them. But really, just to go back on what I mentioned a little bit earlier, the requirement of availability groups to have a Windows cluster was something that prevented people from deploying it within their environments. So a quick question, Windows Failover Clustering had a dependency. Does anyone want to guess what that dependency was, or does know what that dependency was? Active Directory. So we've gotten rid of that dependency now. We have the ability not only just to build our standard cluster in our standard domain, but we can cross domains now. So we can have a node in one domain, a node in another domain, join them to a cluster. Those domains do not have to be trusted either. So it can be trust between those domains or no trust between those domains. The big difference is we can actually put servers that are not registered in a domain into a cluster. So that is a huge piece of work that people have been looking for many, many years. I know I've put a request in several times with the Microsoft guys, when are you going to get clustering without a domain? So finally, they've actually done that. They've achieved what we've asked. And it works with all availability group deployments. So it's not that you're going to limit yourself by choosing that type of cluster. Some other good features which I thought I would mention about Windows Server 2012 is storage replica. So this gives you the ability to synchronously or asynchronously duplicate disks between environments. So you could synchronously replicate your VMs to another box, or data drives and log drives for SQL Server. So that's another option around your HA that you could potentially look into. Storage Spaces Direct is another good feature. That gives you the ability to take local storage attached to servers. So that could be remote storage, SMB, iSCSI, or direct attached disk. And what it'll do, it will distribute that across multiple boxes. So it saves you the expense of purchasing a shared storage device. So you can just natively group these servers together and have a large storage solution, excuse me, for a very minimal cost. Now, there are some limitations to workgroup clusters, because I'm specifically going to focus on them today. First one is there is no support for a failover clustered instance. So that is not possible to deploy at this current point in time. It may be there at RTM, but there is no guarantees. The other thing that it's dependent on is there's no SQL authentication and it's certificate-based synchronization. So just a show of hands, who here has deployed database mirroring? Yeah, so everyone knows database mirroring. Who here has deployed database mirroring based on certificates? No one? Matt, I thought you probably would. So there's no real issue with deploying your availability group on a workgroup cluster in this manner. All we're doing is we're creating the endpoint, like we always do, but we're creating a certificate-based authentication model for that endpoint. We back up the certificate, we copy it to the nodes participating in it, and then we just create a login that has permissions on those certificates. And that's really it. So it's not a complex thing. It's been around since 2005. So it's nothing to worry about when deploying a workgroup cluster.
So always on availability groups. As we said, it was brought in with the release of SQL Server 2012. Like we saw on a few slides earlier, we've got a word cloud here. How many people in here are using or intending to use always on availability groups? Okay, so everything that we've got up on here, you would recognize the concepts or the words and you would understand the definitions of those. For those of you who aren't working with it and are thinking about it, you need to start and understand and learn about these concepts, okay? This isn't the full list of concepts, but it gives you a good idea about the types of things that you need to know and understand when you're using always on availability groups, okay? So we've got a lot there, but what we've got in a traditional setup with the release of SQL Server 2012, we got always on availability groups. It allowed us to utilize multi-subnets, okay? So prior to the release of SQL Server 2012, if we wanted to do a multi-site setup, we had to put our request into our network admin and span our VLAN. Now that was easy for me. Send a request, sit and wait for maybe 3 weeks, maybe longer, network guys complaining about the work that they've got to do, job done. 2012 allowed us to go with a multi-subnet, made our lives easier, made your network guys easier, so you got a better relationship with them. With the release of 2016, as Henry mentioned earlier, we've now got multi-domain support or no domain support. Now, your multi-domain support, trusted, not trusted, it doesn't matter. So we can now create our always-on availability groups across multiple domains. Why would this be a benefit? Anybody? No? Okay, let's say the company you are working for purchases another company. That other company has another domain. They might have 100 or so, even more, SQL boxes. The amount of work for you to pull those servers across into your domain might be okay for you to do that, but what about all of the applications? All of those would need to be changed. So because we've now got multi-domain support, we can provide the same HA and DR capability to that new environment that you've just purchased. Okay? We can pull it in and we can add them to your cluster. We can add them to your availability group and they're getting that same support. If you're using no domain support, let's say you're a very small shop. You've got a single SQL Server box. You want to have DR. No domain support. We can do that. We can create a two-node cluster, have our secondary up in Azure. Okay? We're not having to create a domain. We're not having to stretch up to Azure. But we're now able to provide DR capability for a very small shop. So with that, Henry's now going to take us through our first demo today, having a look at our no domain support.
Thanks, Warwick. So this is the bit that I'm a bit excited about, I have to say. It's something that I've wanted to see for a long time. There's something a bit special up there on the screen. I'll make it a little bit larger so you can see. And what you will notice is that we have a computer name, EU Dublin. It's in a work group, but it's in a cluster called Genco Olive Oil. There is a prize if anyone knows about the Genco Olive Oil reference. So you can come up and mention it to me later. There's one person who's excluded from that because I think you were at my presentation yesterday. So, oh, two. So I have two nodes in the cluster, Dublin and Nodnall. Just to show you that I'm not making things up, if I go into my server properties, and go into our advanced system settings, computer name, and if we change that, we'll see that it is a work group. is an important thing in here when setting up the no domain cluster. So a DNS suffix is a very important thing to register as part of that. So I've registered the same DNS suffix for both cluster nodes in there. Without that, you're never going to get this working. So I'll just jump out of that. Now, another thing I wanted to show you was Failover Cluster Manager. So we launch Failover Cluster Manager, and it will not launch because it says you need access to Active Directory, and there is no Active Directory. So if you're going to build a no domain cluster, you need to build it through PowerShell. That is not a very difficult thing to do, I can assure you. If I can do it, anybody can do it. So just to show you some of the basic commands that you have to run in relation to this, there's a few caveats. As I said, the DNS suffix needs to be registered. You need to create a local account on both nodes. That account must have the same username and it must have the same password. You can use the local administrator account if you wish. That is what I used in this case. There is a registry change that you need to make. And then it's just quite simply, you create your cluster. In this case, I gave mine a static IP address. You do not have to, but I found that this worked better in this scenario. I have already configured everything, the cluster, the availability group, because I didn't want to chance my luck with the demo gods and have this fail, because it is a pre-release version of Windows and SQL, so we didn't want to get too clever with this. But what I can do is just run some simple PowerShell commands. Whoops. So we'll get the cluster name. We know the cluster name. We can get the resources in the cluster. So we have our cluster IP address, as you always see. We have our cluster network name, which you can see, and we have our availability group in there. That looks all pretty standard to you guys. It's just not displayed through a GUI. It's just displayed through the command line. We can get some details of our cluster resources. So this is in relation to our cluster IP address. So we can see the network name, we can see the IP address itself, the subnet mask, all the standard configuration items that you would normally see within failover clustering. But we can do other things. We can stop our cluster IP address. So let's take that offline, and it's now offline. Pop quiz, what else is going to go offline because my cluster IP address went offline? Anyone? The network name for the cluster, yes. So you'll find that both of them are now offline. If we run this command again, we will see that both the cluster network name are offline and the IP address, but our availability group is still online. So we're still up and running, don't worry about it. So we'll start those cluster resources again. Sometimes it takes a little while, but once we get them up and running, everything seems to be pretty good. So they're now both online. So we know about our resources, we know about our resource groups. I want to see what nodes that these resources are residing on. I maybe want to patch one of my servers. So if I get that information. So we see that everything is currently running on the Dublin node. So both cluster resource groups. We also have available storage, which is offline. Anyone care to guess why the available storage is offline? We don't have any shared storage, so therefore it's not going to show as online. That'll be the same as if you look at it in your traditional failover cluster. So we'll move the cluster group, we'll fail it over to the other node, And that's just the standard failover process that we're moving. We're going from EU Dublin to EU Nodnall. The other question is, where is Nodnall? Anyone know? Nodnall. Nobody? Nobody watch Red Dwarf? Well, Nodnall's in Bulgaria, but Nodnall is the opposite of London because Lister's a bit stupid and he thought when he saw it written backwards, it was in Bulgaria. So we have Nodnall failed over to we have our cluster failed over to Nodnall. Finally, the last thing that we're going to do is go into our availability group. We have our primary. We show our dashboard. Everything is the same. You're just going to see all the standard stuff that you always have seen. And what we can do is very easily go in here, right-click, select failover. You can do it through the wizard. These wizards do work if you wish, or you can script it out. And what we'll see is our availability group fails over in the standard way. There's one thing, obviously, that we don't have in here, which is our listener. So currently, there isn't the ability to create a listener in there. But what you can do is, in your availability group resource or resource group within the cluster, you could register your own IP address, your own network name, and you could use that for your connections for your application. It just means you don't have that ability to point the listener at a readable secondary. So that's just one thing to consider, but very easy to do. If I just select the information on the cluster group now, and we'll see that everything is running on Nodnall. So that brings that demo to an end. I'll pass you back to Warwick.
Okay. So with the enhancements that we've been talking about, and with Henry taking us through the node domain, okay, one of the things that you will want to consider if you are using the node domain setup, because you can't have a listener with your connection strings, just like in database mirroring, you'll want to put in your failover partner parameter into your connection string. So when it fails over, it's able to connect to the secondary or the new primary that you've just failed over to. Now what we see up here on the screen is a typical setup that you would see in either 2012 or 2014. Okay, three nodes that are in our cluster and we're set up and we have three synchronous data movement targets, but we only have a limitation of two auto failover targets. So if we have a problem and we lose Brisbane 1, we stay up. We've still got that auto or the synchronous data transfer between Brisbane 2 and Brisbane 3. However, if we then have a further problem, we have to rely on manual failover. With the release of 2016, this now changes. So our auto failover partner or target goes from 2 up to 3 to stay in standard with our synchronous. So if we have the same failover that we saw before, we stay up and we still have that ability for auto failover, which means that we meet or we've got more ability to meet our SLAs, keeping our uptime. Okay, because under 2012 or 2014, if we failed or if we lose our original primary, you've then got to have some sort of monitoring in place to notify you that there's been a second failure for you to then come in and do a manual failover. 2016 rectifies that by increasing the number of failover targets. Now, where are my developers in the room? Have I got any developers? A handful. So thinking about the scenario that we've got on screen, what's the major thing from a developer's point of view that you're looking for at the database level? Either one of you? Yeah? I was more looking for, you're wanting to get access to another replica or a target to be able to point your applications at to read from. So with the release of 2012, we got readable secondaries. In 2012 and 2014, there's a limitation when it comes to readable secondaries. What happens is your application connects to the listener. As long as inside the connection string, it's using the application intent parameter, the listener will decide which replica you are to go to. You do have to have your read-only routing list configured. The problem is, in 2012 and 2014, if we were configured to have Brisbane 2, Brisbane 3, and Gold Coast 1 as readable secondaries, every single one of our application connections are going to always hit Brisbane 2. So if your read or your reporting environment is very heavy, then you've got the possibility of a bottleneck because all of your applications are going to be hitting Brisbane 2. With the release of 2016, this now changes in that we can see down the bottom in red, we've got Brisbane 2, Brisbane 3, and Gold Coast 1 inside of parentheses. Those parentheses are what's allowing us to say we want our readable secondaries to be distributed between these. In a round-robin approach, as the connections come through, the listener will send them off to each of the available replicas. In the event that we then have a failure and we lose all three of those, it will then go over to Sunny Coast 1. And we're back to the same situation of a potential bottleneck with all of our application read connections hitting that one server. However, if we're in that scenario, we're more than likely in a disaster recovery scenario. So we deal with it at that point in time to get our environment back up and running. Question?
Is the priority list changes at this time?
Sorry?
Priority
list
changes here for the read only list.
So the question was, does the priority list change? So in 2012 and 2014, the way that you create the priority list, you still give the servers. We'll have a look, we'll see more about that in the upcoming demo. But what you want to think about from 2016, the easiest way to think about it is an extra set of parentheses around the list of secondaries that you want to do the load balancing between. Okay? How many in here have been wanting to go to using availability groups but haven't been able to because of DTC support? Okay, this all changes with the release of 2016, but there are caveats. Now bear in mind, at the moment, we're talking about CTP. So things may change between us talking today and when it's released early next year. But the caveats are, CrossDB, same instance, no support, okay? CrossDB, cross instance, we have DB support. Is that going to allow you to start and look at using always on availability groups to meet your HA and DR for those of you who use DTC as a requirement in your environment? Yeah? The way this is achieved, DTC is now associated at the database level. So when you add a database to an availability group, you need to, there's a checkbox that you need to enable DTC support for that database. Now it's not turned on by default. And the reason being is that we want to keep things as they are. So you need to manually decide, I need DTC support, and turn it on. The other side of it, if you enable DTC support, it does add extra overhead. Okay, because it's doing more work. So that's why another reason why it's not on by default. But it allows you to upgrade to 2016, do your testing, turn it on, do your testing, make sure that you're happy with it. Okay, and it doesn't impact your other application databases that don't require DTC support. Failover rules. Currently with 2012, 2014, it's based at the instance level. Okay, with 2016, we can enable database level health. What that means is you've got to enable it for the availability group. Once again, it's not on by default. What that allows you to do, any database inside an availability group, if the engine determines that there is a problem with one particular database, it will automatically fail over. Okay? So with that in mind, let's have a look at our second demo for this afternoon. So for our readable secondaries, okay, if we just have a quick look at what we've already got configured. So we can see, let me make that a little bigger. So we can see here our routing priority. Okay, so it shows that for Brisbane, we've got two servers that we can go to, Melbourne, Sydney. For Melbourne, we can go to Sydney, Brisbane. For Sydney, we can go Melbourne, Melbourne, Brisbane. This is what the setup is. If you go back and have a look at your 2012 or 2014 environments, this is what you will see. Okay, it's saying that my first failover is going to be Melbourne. So all of my readable connections are going to be hitting that one server. If I lose that server, I'll then go to the second server. What that looks like, I've just got a little PowerShell script that I'll just kick it off. And all we've got in this PowerShell script is it's looping through, hitting a connection against our readable secondary, hitting that secondary, and just doing select add at server name. So we can see here, we're hitting Melbourne, okay? All of our connections. Now, if you think about in your production environment, it's going to be a whole lot busier than this, right? And that's where I was saying that the potential for a bottleneck, all hitting that one server. With 2016, to make the change, now this will just take me a little bit of time, but what I'm going to be doing is I've got the extra set of parentheses, and I'm going to fail over to Sydney and make it our primary, update our read-only routing list. And we just need to do that for all three servers in our availability group. Now, bearing in mind, we're running 6 VMs off my laptop, so your production environment is going to be a lot quicker than this. So we come back to Brisbane, making Brisbane back our primary. Once it completes for us, there we go. If we come back and we rerun our script, now it's doing exactly the same thing. Hopefully it should come up pretty quick. And we should see a difference from what we saw first time round to second time round. And we can see that it's rotating between our two secondaries that we put in place. Now, if we go back and have a look at the read-only routing list again, what's the difference from the first one to the second one? There we go. So in 2016, if you've got the routing list, all of the ones that you want it to rotate between will all be one. If we had another replica and we didn't, like we saw on the slides, then it would be at two. If we lost these two, it would then fail over to that third one. Now for our failover, I'm just going to change servers and go to our current primary, and we can see here I've got a C drive and an E drive. For this demo, what we've done on in our availability groups, we've got a couple of databases, one of which is configured with its data file and log file on a separate drive. So I'm going to simulate losing a disk. Okay, so I'm just running a PowerShell command to take that disk offline. Take a couple of seconds for it to work through. So basically, I'm ripping my data and log file drive out from underneath my database. Now, if you had that happen now in your 2012 or 2014 environment, the instance is still up and running. So the availability group isn't going to detect it and isn't going to fail over. Okay, so we've completed there. Just to show that I have actually removed it. Do a refresh. are you not gone? Demo gods, hang on a second. Disk 2, offline. I'm not liking that. Run that one. There we go. Thanks, Matt. So we took it offline and added it back. When that completes, we'll be able to see that on our Brisbane server. There we go. So eDrive's gone. Going back into Management Studio, if I expand our Always On Availability group, do a refresh, we can still see that our Brisbane server is our primary. Okay, so that's the same behavior that we would expect in 2012 and 2014. Now, if I have a look at the properties of that availability group, we can see here that I've got database level detection enabled. And this is what I mentioned in the slides, that we need to have this on for it to work. The reason why it hasn't failed over yet, I'm not running any transactions. Okay? Your environment is going to be running transactions. With that in mind, let me just open up our failover script. Just make it a little bit bigger. All I'm doing is I'm going to attempt to create a table and insert some rows into that table. We've failed. We'd expect it to fail because we know that we don't have a disk for our data and log. If I do a refresh, it's now our secondary. Okay, is that going to make your life easier as a prod support looking after your environment, that one database goes offline, everything fails over to a new replica, and that database is back online? As long as you've got your monitoring in place for you to be notified that it has failed over, you've got time to then look at that secondary, work out why it went offline, fix the problem, fail back to your current primary. So let's go back to the slides. Some further support, SSIS DB support. In 2012 and 2014, we could add an SSIS DB to an availability group, but there were manual steps that we had to do to make this work. Okay, so when we added it, we then had to go and create SQL agent jobs on all of our replicas to identify and monitor for a failover, plus also look at applying the master key, because the way that SSIS DB caters with sensitive data, it's encrypted with the master key. Well, that password needs to be on all of those servers. With 2016, this has been enhanced such that when we add it to an availability group, it now supports that. We then go into the SSIS DB catalog. We need to select availability group support. Once we've got that, it goes and creates those agent jobs for us. Okay, so it makes life simple. At that point in time, it will ask you for the password for your master key so that it can go and put it on all of the replicas. Okay, so as a DBA, that's going to make your life a whole lot easier. Online operations. There's been some increases in online operations. That is that we can now do truncate against partitions. So therefore, we stay up and online. It's fully supported in availability groups. So therefore, we meet our uptime requirements. We can also do alter-column alterations, which are in an online state, fully supported with our availability groups, keeping everything online. GMSA support. Does anybody in here know what GMSA is or is thinking of using it? No? Okay, so group managed service accounts. Group managed service accounts are a domain level account that are created and are fully supported and managed by the domain. The majority of you, I'm assuming, are using domain level service accounts. Okay? if you're impacted by regulatory requirements and auditing to change passwords of your service accounts. It's very painful, isn't it? Okay? You've got to go and change. However many environments you've got to go and make those changes. For them to take effect, you've got to do a restart of your instance. So you've got to have an outage. Impacts your uptime. GMSAs, it's all done behind the scenes. When it's changed, so it uses the AD security rules. By default, every 30 days, it will change the password. No one can log on because it's not an account that can be logged on by anybody. We don't even know what the password is. Behind the scenes, 30 days, it changes. It doesn't require a restart of your instance. It does not impact your always-on availability groups. Log performance. This has been one of the biggest bottlenecks, and it came about with the introduction of Fusion cards. Okay? If you're in an environment that is heavily loaded, does lots and lots and lots of transactions, and you've got Fusion cards, the throughput that you can achieve is phenomenal. The problem is the transport layer from primary replica to secondary replica and the redo phase of that can't keep up. So the guys in the product team looked at this and went, we need to improve it. So what they did, they went, what is the throughput that we can get on a standalone system? We don't want to improve the throughput by 10%, 15%, 20%. We want to improve the throughput to within 95% of what is achievable for that standalone server. Now, the way that they did that, our log capture, they've implemented compression, also implemented multi-threading to send the packets across from our log capture to our log receive. You are still going to be restricted by the size of your pipe and your network that you have in place, okay? But it has the capability to keep up. Also, the redo thread, it was lagging. So what they did, they've changed the way that the redo happens. It's now multi-threaded so that it can keep up with the throughput that is being passed through. Okay? So my good friend Jimmy May, who works at Fusion, he gave me this graph. You can see here, log bytes received. Huge increase. Okay? So this is testing that the Fusion guys did, taking a system, hammering it, seeing what can go through. So it improves the performance of your environment. Now, hopefully this next slide is the big one for most of you. Standard edition support, basic HA. Okay? Database mirroring has been deprecated for quite some time. Guess what? It's going. This is the replacement. Okay? So it's getting you the same benefits as Enterprise Edition, except for a few small caveats. It's giving you the same as database mirroring. As we can see up here, single availability database. Only two replicas, no readable secondaries, no listener. We can't do backups on secondaries. But the benefit that it gives us over database mirroring, we could only use synchronous replication. We can choose either synchronous or asynchronous, right, for standard edition. That comes in handy where I was saying if we were doing our no domain cluster earlier and we're going to Azure, we can put in place our asynchronous replica up to Azure. In standard edition, we've got DR. So with that, Henry's going to give you a glimpse into the future. We've been allowed. So I was in Redmond 2 weeks ago with the product team. This actually hasn't been announced, but the product team gave me the nod that we can tell you about it here today. So you're going to hear something new that is coming. So I hope you enjoy.
Thanks, Warwick. So we have our availability groups. Everyone knows about them. We've had them a long time. Very exciting. How do we make them more exciting? Well, we bring in the concept of a distributed availability group. What that means is we can have two clusters. Cluster one, which is in Brisbane AG1, can replicate the data to Sydney. So this is the ability to, if you have a DR site, you can more efficiently distribute your data to that DR site. What you will do is it will send only a single data stream over. So traditionally, normally, if you had two servers at your DR site, it would send the data to both of them. Now we just send the data to one. Brisbane, as you can see, is the primary. Sydney one is called a forwarder. So the data is not accessible there. Similar, I suppose, in some ways to replication, you had your distribution server there. It's acting as that. It is going to distribute the data then to the other replicas down in Sydney. So where are the advantages to this? Well, there's many that you could think of, probably not all that we've considered yet. But one is, let's say, for example, you want to upgrade the operating system on your cluster. So Brisbane is running SQL 20 or Windows 2012 or 2. Sydney, you want to be running Windows 2016 because of all the fancy new features in 2016. What you can do is you can build your Windows 2016 cluster, install SQL on that, set up your availability group to that. Once everything's in sync and you have a nice bit of quiet time, very quickly, you can fail everything over to Sydney. So we're talking minimal downtime in relation to a server operating system upgrade. The only thing you can't do, obviously, is duplicate the listener between the two sites, unless they were perhaps on separate domains. But, you know, using some DNS magic or load balancer magic, you could very easily get the applications to automatically connect to that new server. So that's going to be pretty exciting when that comes along. When it comes along, we don't know, do we?
No,
we don't know. But it's certainly something that's going to be very interesting when it happens. So just to go over some of the concepts that we covered here today, we discussed, obviously, the enhancements to SQL 2016 and Windows 2016. So we have the increased automatic failover targets from 2 up to 3, which is something that people had wanted for a very long time. And also the automatic failover if a database were to be detected as unhealthy. So that is always something that people have requested, and now we finally have the ability to do that. The big thing that I think is the Windows updates with the cross-domain support and no domain support. That's going to open up availability groups to a lot more people and a lot more organizations to distribute their data more efficiently and obviously provide greater HA to their back-end systems. We also have the round-robin load balancing of replicas. So this, I think, is a really good thing. We had to utilize our own sort of round-robin recently during Melbourne Cup, where we wanted to consume the data off our secondaries a little bit more. So what we did was we just forced some applications to one readable secondary, some to the other. It wasn't true round-robin load balancing, but at least we were able to distribute the load across our read-onlys. This means we don't have to do this next time we upgrade, so we can have that configured out of the box. SSIS support is going to be a great feature. Group managed service accounts. As Warwick said, if you're not using them, you should seriously think about using them. That's a great security feature that's within Windows. And it certainly avoids that requirement to document your SQL Server service account passwords. You don't have to worry about that. How many people have logged into a database server and they're trying to do something? Somebody restarts SQL, it doesn't start, and next thing people go, well, what's the service account password? Nobody knows. So then you have to go through that entire mess of resetting that service account password. Don't have to do it anymore if you use that. The log transport performance is going to be another big change for a lot of organizations. It's certainly going to affect us because during peak periods, we do get an awful lot of activity going through. So all of these updates and enhancements are going to help. I think the most popular one probably is the one last on the list, is the standard edition support for availability groups. That is something people have wanted. Database mirroring was never going to go away until there was a replacement. So now that we have that replacement for database mirroring and standard edition, I think everyone's going to be really happy. And it's going to get rid of many issues that people have. And obviously, it's built on the capabilities of database mirroring. So please complete your evaluation. We'd like to know how we did, whether that's good, bad, or indifferent. It's always good to know where we can improve and what you like and what you don't like, and things that you would like perhaps to hear more about, because we find that difficult. We're trying to understand what you guys want to hear, but if we don't know what you want to hear about, it's hard for us to present sessions. Obviously, please continue your learning on the Virtual Academy in Channel 9. There's some great videos on there and some great courseware that you can run on the Virtual Academy. I've done a few myself. I think I'm up to silver now at this stage, so I'm getting there. And then, obviously, in the Eval Center, there's more that you can download there. So I'm sure most people are off to Movie World this evening. I hope you have a great night. If the guy who was jumping on the Batmobile is here, he did that a couple of years ago. I think they have his picture, so he will not be allowed entry. So I don't know who it was, but yeah, they'll find him. Listen, have a great evening. Thank you for attending, and we'll hang around for questions if anyone wants to ask us anything. Thank you.
Sure.
Is there any plans to get rid of clustering?
So the question was, is there any plans to get rid of clustering? At this stage, I would say no. So clustering is one of the major backbone components for always-on availability groups, because it's using the failover clustering API specifically for the availability group listener. Because with availability groups, it's the listener that fails over between your replicas, and that's why your failover time is so much quicker with availability groups compared to failover clustered instances. So I don't think it's going away anywhere soon, given that the cross-domain and no-domain support that we're getting come 2016.
And just to jump in on that one, Warwick, as well, Microsoft talk about always-on, and we have always-on availability groups, but always-on is basically clustering is the core component of always-on within the Microsoft stack. So to remove that from the always-on feature set is probably very unlikely.
How are the features dependent on Windows 2016?
Okay, so the question was, are all of the features that we talked about today dependent on Windows Server 2016? Okay, so you can use Windows Server 2012 R2 as long as you have, at a minimum, the patch that came out in October. Yes?
Is mirroring actually going
this time? So the question was, is mirroring going? I can't give you an answer whether database mirroring will be gone as part of SQL Server 2016, but given that we now have support for HA in standard edition, the push is move to availability groups. You get more benefits out of using availability groups. So the standard edition HA, the big benefit that you'll get over database mirroring is that log transport performance. Okay, no work is being done against database mirroring. It is just being supported because they needed to. So whether it goes in 2016 or the next version, but if you're still on database mirroring, start to move towards using availability groups.
The other thing I want to ask, did I understand correctly, DTC is not same instance, same database, cross-database. So in the same instance, no DTC support, do I get that right?
Okay, so the question was that the DTC support is between databases in the same instance is not supported, but between databases across instances is supported. That was the question, yes?
Yeah.
Yes, at this point in time, cross-database, cross-instance is supported in the current CTP. They are working on the same instance because they do realize that it is also a big factor for people to take on this technology. It is coming. They are working on it. It's just the time as to when it's going to be available.
So the question was, I suppose, can you fail over your availability group through failover cluster manager?
Yeah.
So the recommended way to do it is still through Management Studio if you're doing it through a manual process.
To add to that, so yes, you can do it through Management Studio. You've also got PowerShell, T-SQL, SMO, okay? But they are specific to doing that, okay? It is not recommended to do failovers. So with failover clustered instances, you went in and you failed it over inside of Cluster Manager. With availability groups, you don't touch failover Cluster Manager. You do it inside of SQL because it's a SQL technology using the listener name, which is a cluster resource, and using the API, the failover clustering API, that listener name is what is failed over between the various replicas in your availability group. Okay, so but it's triggered from with inside of SQL Server. Okay. So any other questions? Well, I've got some business cards down here. There's also some USBs if you would like a USB. Otherwise, enjoy tonight. Thank you for coming. If you have any questions, I will be in the speakers lounge or the speakers area tomorrow. I won't ask you to come down there, given that it's the end of the day today and you're all wanting to go off to Movie World. So thank you.